الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وأصحابه ومن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين وسلم تسليما كثيرا ما بعد. Praises due to Allah, and we ask Allah to exalt, the mention, and grant peace, and send His blessings upon the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, upon his companions, his wives, and all those who follow them on their path of righteousness until the end of time. How are you brothers doing? Everybody's good? Okay, don't fall asleep. Inshallah. I know the mood is very, you know, cozy. But we'll try to make it a little hot by the time we're finished. Because we're dealing with a very interesting topic, inshallah. Session 4 of the workshop, which deals with how to give da'wah to the Hindus, Buddhists, and other idolaters. I didn't want to really restrict it to one religion without the other, because they're all the same. I mean, Christianity, they have their own set of rules that you need to be aware of before you approach them. But when you come to the issues of Hindus and Buddhists, it's just that the only difference is the size of the god, how fat it is, whether it has a nose or not, and some other ridiculous things that to us is just all nonsensical. And so I prefer to provide myself and the brothers with a platform or with a foundation, so that irrespective of who you're giving da'wah to, if they are among the polytheists, the mushrikeen, whether regardless of the form of God they worship, there's one standard way to give him da'wah. Because one may say, I'm not really interested in learning the name of the Hindu gods and the background and the history, or read their book. And the same goes for Buddhism and so on and so forth. And you're right. Unless this is your field, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. And you may want to know just the basics to give da'wah if you come across a Hindu, if you come across a Buddhist, without knowing the history of the religion. Christianity may be a little different because they're more common, and they have other issues as well. And so basically this is what we will be doing, inshallah. The session will primarily address that foundation. And once you have that foundation intact and well understood, then inshallah, with Allah's aid and success, or the granting of success, you'll be able to deal with any mushrik on earth. Of course, the atheists will have their own separate time, inshallah. So let's begin. We have all these mushrikeen, and you're on an airplane, and this Hindu or Buddhist or whatever it is next to you. So what do you say? One guy, one answer at a time. I'm being sarcastic. No one is answering. What do you say? Brother, yes, you. Don't look at anybody else.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. After the hello and the introduction, and this is your seat belt, and all the nice stuff, you want to address religion. Now, with a Christian, we dealt with some examples, or we have some background. But with a Hindu, what do you say? Buddhist, whatever.
The purpose of life.
Purpose of life. Okay. He says the purpose of life is to worship the one true God. They will tell you that. Huh? Okay, so now he said, okay, I worship one God. The truth, he says, is in Hinduism. No, but that's what I want. You're just giving me a brief shortcut. I want the actual discussion, the technical, difficult issues. Because see, the problem with these people is that everybody is a liar. Let's just be straightforward. They're pretty much liars. They want to get out of the whole discussion and says, I worship one God, you worship one God. What is your problem? Okay? I'm no different than you. It's really one God I'm worshiping. Now all these other manifestations and their points of concentration, blah, blah, blah. And so he can shut you up. Because if he says to you, you worship one God, I worship one God, then you're stuck. There's no point in discussing anything more. He says, just you have your own culture, and I have my own culture. You have your own rituals, I have my own rituals. So how do you win him over? What do you need to prove to him Can't hear. I can't hear you. Good. That's one approach. Reference or quote the Quran and the story many times narrated in different places of the Quran of Ibrahim, huh, with his father Azar and his qawm, his people, his tribe, and how he confronted them regarding their shirk, and how he proved to them the fallacy. This is what we want to deal with, the fallacy of these gods. You had your hand raised, Akhid. Do you have an answer? Okay.
Now we have to put something inside their minds that cow can't do anything for you. Fire can't do anything for you. Stones can't do anything for you.
Fantastic.
You think that there is something on your head. He's doing everything. The beginning of this world. Cow can begin this world.
Mm.
The fire can begin this world.
Mm.
The stone can begin this world.
Mm.
And after that we will start our discussion. And after that we will put life of Muhammad
sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
That is, I think, is the biggest thing in the world that anyone can turn their mind.
Okay. I think you hit bullseye. It's exactly what I'm looking for. In fact, the ayat which I had intended to quote were summarized with what the brother said in a couple of sentences. Well, not that anyone can summarize the ayat of the Quran, but what I mean is the message. The message is proving to them the inability of their gods. And this, the answer, the standard ayat, which it's recommended that you memorize in Arabic. Okay, you memorize them in Arabic. And then know the equivalent of that in whatever language you use for da'wah. Are the ayat which you find in the beginning of Surah Al-Furqan. Surah Al-Furqan is one of the يعني, strongest surah of the Quran addressing Tawheed and exposing the false gods. And so in the beginning, perhaps I believe it's ayah number 3. The very first ayah in the second page, because the Surah Al-Furqan, if you're using the standard Mushaf, the first few ayat are on the bottom of the page on the right, and then on the left, top. Allah says, وَاتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِهِ آلِهَةً لَا يَخْلُقُونَ شَيْئًا وَهُمْ يُخْلَقُونَ وَلَا يَمْلِكُونَ لِأَنفُسِهِمْ ضَرًّا وَلَا نَفْعًا وَلَا يَمْلِكُونَ مَوْتًا وَلَا حَيَاةً وَلَا نُشُورًا وَاتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِهِ آلِهَةً. They have taken besides him آلِهَة, gods. This is one of the evidences we use to prove to the people that they are gods. And the correct translation of La ilaha illallah is not there's no God but Allah. Rather, there's no God worthy of worship except Allah. Otherwise, Allah said that they are gods. But Allah called them false gods. ذَلِكَ بِأَنَّ اللَّهَ هُوَ الْحَقَّ وَأَنَّ مَا يَدْعُونَ مِن دُونِهِ الْبَاطِلِ. That is that Allah is the only true God and everything they call on besides Him is false. اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِهِ آلِهَةً. They have taken besides Him Allah Azza wa Jal, Aliha, objects of worship. Now, Allah will then tell us the description. He will describe for us the characteristics of every false god. And we will use this as a benchmark or as a yardstick to evaluate the objects of worship of the Hindus or the Buddhists or anybody else, whether it is a cow or the fire or whatever. We say, okay, these are the standards. If that object of worship meets these standards, it qualifies to be a god. If it doesn't meet these standards, it is disqualified. If it is disqualified, your worship is in vain. You're worshiping a false god. Fair enough? They have to say this is fair enough if they believe in the existence of God. Because when you say God, it's a word that has a meaning and it has a definition. And if you don't have a definition for it, then there's no longer, it's gone. We will not accept this to the even a preposition in the language. In or on or at or whatever, it must have a definition and a place and a role to play. If it didn't have one, we can no longer say anything about this word or this preposition, let alone God, the concept, not only the word. So what are the qualities? اتخذوا من دونه آلهة. Number one thing, لا يخلقون شيئا. It's amazing, man. Amazing Quran. لا يخلقون شيئا. You see, this is a nice way to add the word شيئا. They don't create. That's sufficient. لا يخلقون, they don't create. No, شيئا, anything. They can create anything. Nothing. Zero. Nada. Zip. And so we say, okay, hey. Let's say you catch a Hindu, you know, worshipping Shiva or Vishnu or a cow. Huh? And you can say, okay, look, if can you tell it to create for me just one fly? One fly. Mosquito. Mosquito. Fly is too big. Mosquito is thinner. Therefore, easier. Just one. And you know what? You bring all your people. Okay, I want you to bring the whole Hindu, you know, faith and the followers. All of you together, prostrate before this object of worship and request just to make me believe. Just to make me believe. Only one mosquito. Will it be able to do it? لا يخلقون شيئا. They can't create anything. And Allah in the Quran mentioned ذُبَابًا in another ayah. Cannot even create a fly. And even if the fly were to steal something, it were to take something from them, they can't extract it back. See how Allah belittles their state of mind? Even a fly. لا يخلقون شيئا. But wait, there's a counter argument. They will say to you, okay, so where's the creation of your God? You're saying that our gods cannot create anything. So where's the creation of your God? What do you do? Huh? No answer? No, they will tell you. They will tell you, look, okay, we tried. Now you make your supplicate to your God and we want to see a fly. Want to see a mosquito? You're trapped. Unless you have an outlet. Somewhere. Wrong answer. طيب, fair enough. But we're trying to apply the same... يعني the same requests or the same issues we imposed on them, they may turn around and impose them on us. We have to be fair. They say, how come you want, you know, our fly now? Why do you want the fly now? And now with you, you're saying, you know, well, everything was created by your God. Yes?
Look around.
There you go, that comes closer. You say, listen, there's a difference between the two of us, you see. There's a difference between the two of us. In our case, our Creator already told us that He is Al-Khalaq. And He is Al-Khaliq, the one who's always creating. It doesn't require that we ask Him to create anything. Everything around us is being created around the clock. And He claims that He is the Creator. Now, does your object of worship claim that it is the Creator? Then you say, I'm saying that the one, the unseen God, has a revelation which He says that He creates everything. Allahu khaliqu kulli shay. Allah is the creator of everything. Where does it say in your thing that this thing you're worshipping, which you made down the street, is the one that created everything? You don't have it. So we have a claim and we have a proof for it. In fact, look around all over the world. Everything is being created as you walk by. Plants are growing and chicken, chicks are coming from chicken or eggs or whatever. The whole process. You should have mentioned chicken during a class because people start thinking about food. Sorry. Too late. You see? So what are you going to do? We say there's a huge difference between the two of us. So So we don't. Allah has already told us. Your God didn't tell you that. We have evidence that He told us that, and He said, look around. I don't need to supplicate, because as I'm speaking to you, millions of things are being created now. Just look around you. لا يخلقون شيئا. They don't create anything. وهم يخلقون. Nay, but they are created. So first they cannot create, then second they are created. Now you go to any statue in the world. Did it create the people, or did the people create it? The people created it. In a sense that they created it from Allah's creation. Right? Not that we create from scratch. But also khalq is given as an attribute to the human beings. Just so you will know. In the hadith of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, in regards to the image makers, it will be said to them on Yawm al-Qiyamah, أَحْيُوا مَا خَلَقْتُمْ. Give life to that which you created. Meaning you used Allah's creation, just like a carpenter will make a door from wood. Allah created the wood and the carpenter created the door. Not that He brought it from nowhere or from nothing, but He had something to do with the process of creation something. You create a document. No one said you're a mushrik. Say, brother, I'm creating an Excel sheet. What, brother? Only Allah is the creator. You got some people, you know, as soon as they get religiously committed, they think they have figured everything out. Brother, this is haram. You don't create a document. Allah creates a document. Take it easy, man. This is language. There's room and flexibility. Yes, you create a document for Allah's sake, but you don't bring it from scratch. You use Windows. Anyways, the point being that they don't create anything and they themselves are created. So we can ask him, what year was your God made? And in which factory, or who's the artist, who's the sculptor, who's this fannan? You know, like, what was it, Michelangelo? Is that the one who made all these different images of supposedly the Christian God and the father is a muscular man with no shirt? You know, he's giving life to Adam through the finger. You've seen that that image? Crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff. You know, that's the Christians for you. So basically, we say to them, whatever it is that you're worshiping, it was created by you. You did not create it. Now, Allah Azza wa Jal, was He created? What's the evidence? هو الأول والآخر. Allah is the first. Allah is the first. ليس قبله شيء. In the hadith of the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام, when he made dua according to the ayah, and he would, the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام would use an ayah from the Quran and he would make a dua in reference to the ayah. And he said, أنت الأول ليس قبلك شيء. You are the first and there's nothing before you. There was Allah in another hadith. There was Allah and there was nothing else. Does your God claim that it was the first? They will not be able to prove it. Does Allah claim that He is the first in His own revelation? Yes, He does. Therefore, He could not be created, because if He were created, He would be the creation. Then He can no longer be the creator, because it just doesn't make any sense. Logically and linguistically, it does not make any sense. If the creator is the creation, He's no longer the creator. لا يخلقون شيئا وهم يخلقون. Now he comes the real hot stuff. This is pretty spicy. وَلَا يَمْلِكُونَ لِأَنفُسِهِمْ ضَرًّا وَلَا نَفْعًا. They do not possess for themselves. ضَرًّا. What is ضَرًّا? يَكْشِفُ الضُّرْ. ضُرْ ضَرْ. Harm. Harm. وَلَا نَفْعًا. Benefit. These false gods, one of their main qualities for you to identify them is لا يملكون لأنفسهم ضرا ولا نفع. They don't possess for themselves no harm nor any benefit. Amazing. This leads us to a statement, a proverb amongst the Arabs, which says فاقد الشيء لا يعطي. The one who does not possess something, the one who lacks something, cannot possibly give it to others. Correct? If you needed 5 riyals, and I don't have 5 riyals. Is it ever possible that I can give you 5 riyals? It's impossible, because I myself don't have 5 riyals. If I had 5 riyals and you needed 5 riyals, it's negotiable now. Do I want to give it to you or do I want to keep it for myself? But if I don't have it, end of discussion. So now if these gods of theirs do not possess for themselves harm or benefit, evidence. If this false god of theirs, if a bird were to fly over it and drop some presents, can that god go like this? Ha! You know, pull out an umbrella and prevent the droplets from falling on it? Would it fall on its head? If a dog came and urinated, can that false god kick it? Say, get out of here, I'm a god. Can't urinate on me. The dog will what? Will urinate. So can that false god, could it prevent harm from itself? Absolutely not. In fact, who's the one who maintains it? Who maintains it? Human beings. They're worshippers. The worshippers maintain the object of worship. It's amazing. Now you know, just so you'll understand, people say, you know, how can Allah put people in Jahannam forever? You know? Some people present this misconception, you know? And you know, how is it, you know, forever, eternity, yani this is cruel. Say, no, this is not cruel. This is fair. This is justice. This is justice from Allah Azza wa Jalla. Look at these people, man. Look how feeble-minded they are. Look how evil they are. Look how oppressive they are. This is the epitome of dhulm. Inna shirka la dhulmun azim. This is ridiculous. You know that this thing needs you for maintenance. How in the world are you asking it to take care of you when you're taking care of it? I mean, it's just, you must be out of your mind or really evil. And if you're out of your mind, you're not held accountable. If you're crazy, رُفِعَ عَنْكَ قَلَمْ, the pen has been lifted. But if you're not crazy, then you deserve Jahannam. Ultimately. And so that's what Jahannam is for these kind of individuals. Because they are maintaining these objects of worship, but they are asking these objects of worship to maintain them. So لَا يَمْلِكُونَ لِأَنفُسِهِمْ ضَرًّا وَلَا نَفْعًا, nor do they possess any benefit. No harm, they cannot prevent harm from afflicting them, and they cannot even benefit themselves. These false gods cannot even benefit themselves. How will they benefit you? وَلَا يَمْلِكُونَ مَوْتًا وَلَا حَيَاتًا وَلَا نُشُورًا, nor do they control or possess the control of death, nor life, nor resurrection. We go back to the early argument. The early argument is what? This is your false god? Tell him to kill me now. Let him kill me. Or there's a cockroach right there. Tell him to kill the cockroach. The cockroach is evil. You know, it stinks and it makes, you know, women are afraid of it, and it's an, you know, it's not the loveliest insect out there. Tell him to kill it. Is he going to kill it? No. In fact, who has more control of it, over this cockroach, than that god? You. You can go there and smash it with your foot and everybody will be happy. You are in better control to take away a life than this false god. لَا يَمْلِكُونَ لِيَمْ وَلَا يَمْلِكُونَ مَوْتًا وَلَا حَيَاتًا, don't think they have life.
There's a danger there. You could send back the question.
What?
Ask your God to kill the insect.
Beautiful. Then we have to say, well, our God told us in the Quran that He is the one who يُحِي وَيُمِيت. He is the one who causes life and death. We don't interfere with the divine command. You see, in their case, they don't have such instructions. So that's why we have to go back to the Quran all the time. Our Quran is our backbone. We always rely on it. They say, yeah, but we don't treat our ilah, which is the true God, like you treat yours. ours already gave us standards. He gave us limitations, so we subdue ourselves and we stick to the limits. We don't go beyond the allowed. In your case, you don't have any limits. Everything goes. It's just whatever you come up with. So we refer back to the Quran and we say the guidelines of the Quran are already clear in regards to this matter. Yes, you can be in control, but we cannot kill this cockroach except by the will of Allah. So you always take it back to something in the Quran which indicates that in the case of Allah, He already told us that He takes care of these things. They don't have such references in their revelation. Mashi? So, وَلَا حَيَاتًا وَلَا نُشُورًا. Nor can they control resurrection. Needless to say, tell them to resurrect anything which is dead, and they will not be able to do so. So these are more or less the qualities of the false gods. Now you explore all the religions in the world and all the objects of worship in the world, and you will find that all of them share either all of these characteristics or some of them. Because some may bring a doubt, like the Christians will say, yeah, well, Jesus gave life to the dead. Huh? He gave life to the dead. And they may give you something that is an actual argument, which you have to be aware of. So we say, no, Jesus, that's a whole other discussion, because we have evidences from the Quran that He did this bi-idhnillah. He did this by the will of Allah, so it is not something independent. That is in regards to the Christians. With the rest of them, they don't have these arguments. So you find that their false gods usually have all of these qualities or most of them. But we say one is sufficient to disqualify this object of worship from being a true deity. Only one, let alone the combination of all in one. However, if you were to apply them to the creator of the heavens and the earth, you will find that none of them apply. Because it is Allah Azza wa Jal who creates and He is not created. It is Allah who possesses benefit and harm. And it is Allah Azza wa Jal who controls life, death and resurrection. You don't believe us? Here's a book which says that that is the case. They say, we don't believe this book. We say, bring something like it. Produce the like thereof. We're waiting. We've been waiting for 1400 years. What a bunch of losers you human beings are. You just talk too much. Yeah, this book is a book of shayateen, book of devil. Just produce a chapter like it. If the book was one from the devils, that'd be very easy to duplicate. It'd be very easy to duplicate. But they cannot do it. 1400 years. Can you imagine? That's a long time. That's a long time. No one can do it. So we have something that they can't deal with. You see, this is the fine line here. This is the point of strength which Allah Azza wa Jal gave the Muslims, because that's the only true religion of Allah. They can't play with that. They can beat around the bush and they can get philosophical, but once it comes to the Quran, it's a dead end. Yes, you raise your hand. Very good. Well, wait a second. Let's do one question at a time. Tab, similar question. Go ahead.
What if we prove to the Muslim that, okay, the thing they're worshipping is just false God? What if you say that it is a mean to communicate to God through this
idol? Same thing. Before I give an answer, does anyone here have an answer? Someone says, like the brother said, supposedly he's an educated Hindu. Says, you know, I don't really, I'm not worshiping this particular idol. It's just means of concentration. And I've heard that argument before. I'm just focusing. It's just for me to focus. So how do you refute that? So the truth is, there's no escape from that, by the way. There's no escape from the connection between that point of concentration and the supposedly the true God. Why that one? Say, why that one? Okay, you're saying this is the one. Now, where did that come from? What is the evidence that God, the one true God, told you that this is the thing I want you to look at or to use as means of concentration in order for you to worship me? Give me the evidence from God. Otherwise, because you say to him, otherwise, if you cannot prove it to me, then this is the same argument for Satan worshippers and the Buddhists and everybody else in the world will give you the same argument. The one said the microphone. I think this microphone, because see, it magnifies the voice of human beings. This deserves to be the point of concentration for God. And then, now what? Then someone will tell you, no, the tree. And someone will tell you, the cow. And someone will tell you this. And then there's no end for that. So we say this is chaos. And if you claim that God created chaos and left us all, everybody comes up with his own way, then that's a disaster. And let's assume that this is a point of concentration. What happens if it breaks? He said, I'll make another one. He said, how do you know that this one is as good as the one before? I mean, come on, man. What? How do you prove? You cannot prove these things. Which reminds me of a video. There's a video I saw on YouTube. Crazy video. The craziest video I've ever seen. In the UK, the Hindus, there was a group of Hindus, and they're not only from the subcontinent, by the way, Hindus from all over, including the, you know, British people, original British people. They had a cow that they were worshipping, and they found out that the cow has a disease. I don't know whether it was the mad cow disease or some disease. And the police decided that they have to take this cow and, you know, remove it away from the people and other cows in order not to, contaminate or not contaminate, so the disease will not spread. What is the word? Whatever. Contagious. Nah. So, the police decided to go on a particular day. They gave them a notice to the Hindus that were coming on this day to take away your God. Okay? So, it's crazy video, man. You can see it on YouTube. And then, and they show you the footage. The footage shows you how the Hindus, before the police arrived, they were profusely worshipping this cow at the last moments. You know, the last moments before they separate the God from the creatures. And then the police come in, you know, and they try and they start trying to fight them. Some of the Hindus were trying to fight them off, but they realize that there's not much they can do because the rules of the country say that if the cow is sick, we're going to take it away. You know, we don't care if it's your God. And the police eventually found their way to it. And you can imagine the moment they grab the cow, and they move in the cow around and the people crying as they drive their God away to be slaughtered. And it hit me then. Then I realized how, you know, what I said earlier about the people entering Jahannam. What is wrong with these people? Shouldn't that cow God be able to at least fly at the time of arrest, escape, disappear, kick one of the officers, speak, anything, any miracle that proves its legitimacy would have been entertained. Nothing. It was driven away. And the people were worshipping it as it was going away. And of course they took it and they slaughtered it later. And there you have it. And so these people don't understand. This is what this takes the same point. That you are referring to a created being as point of concentration, which is deficient. And as the brother said, if it's deficient, then you're undermining the majesty of God. Because you're making a deficient being a link and a point of concentration with the perfect. And that can never be the way. That can never be the way. Indeed, I mean, the truth is that they believe that the God is these elephant with, you know, face people and with many hands, and you've seen their, the images which they have. So this is what they really believe, more or less, is their God. But they, like I said, many of them lie. They want to be or sound educated, so they. Same as in Christianity and in the Bible, among the first commandment is that you should not take, you should not make the image. You should not have any image of God, not in the heavens, not on earth, not even under the water. Just in case someone wanted a shark or a whale. It's prohibited in the biblical text in the first commandment, yet Christians and the Catholics in particular continue to erect, human beings and saints and whatever, and they claim that they are gods or the manifestation of God.
all the shit started in the first place, you know, making statues of a point of focus and, you know, from the Hadesa, they used to make the statues of creations.
Yeah, that's the origin, the origin of shirk was none but وَلَا تَذَرُنَّ آلِهَتَكُمْ وَلَا تَذَرُنَّ وَدَّ وَلَا سُوَاعًا وَلَا يَغُوثَ وَيَعُوقَ وَنَسْرًا. It was the same ideology. These are only intercessors with Allah, and we're not really worshipping them, and they are reminders and points of concentration. It's the same idolatry which Allah Azza wa Jal rejected early on and made the whole, you know, people drown. The whole earth back then, according to some of the ulama, that is, it was flooded. And the only people who were saved were Nuh and those who followed him and those who believed with him. So we go back to the issue of shirk. So the conclusion or the bottom line is that this is the foundation. The foundation is to prove to them the imperfection of their false gods versus the perfection of Allah, the one true God. And this is La ilaha illallah. I mean, because when you say the Tawheed, and we're preaching Tawheed and we're teaching Tawheed and da'wah is Tawheed, it actually takes on different forms and manifestations. It could be around the names and attributes of Allah. It could be around the rububiyyah, the lordship of Allah. It could be about the uluhiyyah, the right of Allah being worshipped alone. All of these are forms of La ilaha illallah, by the way. They all fall under that, يعني, that main umbrella. And so in the case of the Hindus, Buddhists and their likes, you want to bring it to them from the state of rububiyyah leading to uluhiyyah. These are incapable gods. They are dependent on you. They are not self-sufficient. They are so on and so forth. Therefore, they cannot be the objects of worship. The object of worship is the one who does not have any deficiency. The one who does not need anything. Does not need your maintenance. Does not expect anything from you. Rather, he is the one who's giving you everything. What is the evidence? The evidence of the Quran. They say, what is the image of God? We say, لَيْسَ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ. There's nothing like Allah. You're not supposed to see Allah in this life. If you were to see Allah Azza wa Jal in this life, then there's no longer belief in ghaib. And what did Allah say in the beginning of Surah Al-Baqarah? Huh? I can't hear you. نعم. يؤمنون بالغيب. The main quality of the people, the believers, is what? They believe in the unseen. That's why if you look at it, pretty much all the pillars of faith are from the unseen. With the exception. Belief in Allah is from the unseen. Belief in the malaika, from the unseen. Belief in the messengers, at all, in the unseen. For us, yes, it's in the unseen. At the time of the Prophet ﷺ, still, only the Messenger of Allah was present. Everybody else, every other Prophet and Messenger, they had to believe in them and they were part of the unseen. Believe in the scriptures, the previous ones, part of the unseen. And believe in the last day, the unseen. And Qadr, the unseen. All of these. So the whole thing is believing in ghaib. If one saw things before one's eyes, then one is not really special. There's nothing special about you believing. If I have a watch here, okay, and I hid this watch, and I told you I have a watch in my hand, when does it, well, hold on a second. Because you trust me, maybe you don't, huh? But when would you be a sincere friend? If you didn't see me put it here, of course, now in front of you. Let's say that, okay, fine, I'll put the watch here. I have something else in my hand. I have a wallet in my hand. Okay? What makes you a true believer or in having faith in your brother in Islam is that you can swear by Allah, if they were a Christian to walk in and he says he has a wallet, you swear by Allah that I have a wallet. Did you see it? No. Why? You trust your brother. You know a Muslim doesn't lie. And you know that I'm not going to lie. So you will say, Wallahi, he has a wallet in his hand. But you didn't see it. I don't have to see it. Because I believe. But if I told you I have a wallet in my hand, is there anything special about you trusting me? No. Because you saw it with your own eyes. So the issue of faith is believing in what you cannot see. Yet because of such confidence, such certainty, that it's as if you can see it. Yani the level of commitment and faith you have is as if you can see it even though you don't see anything. Whereas you can see something in doubt, because some magicians will trick you. They will say like this and then it will disappear. And then you wonder whether they really had a wallet or not. So the belief in Allah Azza wa Jal is one where we trust whatever Allah Azza wa Jal said, and therefore we believe in everything He said without the need to see it. So we say to the Jews, the Hindus, or the Buddhists, or their likes, that we don't have to have an image of Allah. In fact, it is illogical and irrational to have an image of Allah, because once we have one, that defeats the purpose of our belief in the unseen. But believing in the unseen is the core of everything. Because human beings are able to deal with each other based on their belief in the unseen with one another. If everything was materialistic and tangible, then no human relation can exist. A husband can never trust his wife, and a wife can never trust her husband. He's gone, she's gone. What is the thing that makes him remain married? He trusts that she's not cheating on him when he's gone, and vice versa. If there was no such thing, it's impossible. So human relations are based on the idea that you must have faith in that which you do not see. Otherwise, you will go crazy. No business can run, no marriage can succeed, nothing can happen unless we have this quality. Yes. We're going to finish very soon, by the way. Yes, brother. Na'am. But there's an exception in the ayah after. Illa. Ayy. So the knower of the unseen, and he does not show or share that unseen with anyone except those whom he has chosen and is pleased with as messengers. Because Allah, for example, told the Prophet ﷺ things that will happen at the end of time, which are from the unseen. From the seen or the unseen? They're from the unseen. The Dajjal, the coming of Isa ibn Maryam ﷺ, the Nar which will gather the people, the mountain of gold, all these things were from the unseen. But the Prophet ﷺ told the Ummah about them because Allah Azza wa Jal told the Prophet ﷺ. So he showed him part of that. When he went in Isra and Mi'raj, he saw things that people don't see. He saw Jannah and Jahannam, which people have not seen. So these are exceptions to the rule, and Allah gave that exception in the very next ayah. He chooses some whom He gives this privilege. But be careful of the next Sufi, master who tells you that I have the same privileges and therefore I have seen all this. This happens to the messengers of Allah. Not regular people. Anyways, that is really it. Unless you have more questions, we can take maybe a couple of minutes for the questions before those who need to break for Salah can break. Yes, Akhi. Okay. Any other questions? Is that clear? Do you think you can give da'wah to the Hindu on the plane without saying hello? Or after saying hello, I'm sorry. Sure. Yeah, that is always an argument. And that is always an approach. We're dealing with individuals who will basically argue, after you present that to them, that yeah, we still believe that there's one ultimate God. Brahma in some cases, who's controlling everything. These are only, people that will help you to get to God. So some of them will claim that, yes, we know these are not really running the world. There is an ultimate God running the world. These are just objects, or intercessors or intermediaries. So that is the argument they may present. You can present that argument, but if they give you that argument I gave you now, you should have another one as well. So you will not get cornered. You don't want to be cornered while giving da'wah, because they may corner you. And if they corner you and you're unable to answer, you're in trouble. So that's why you have to have everything covered. Know what you're doing. You have these arguments. Then of course, it's a learning process. Some people just think of arguments on their own. Some people read them. Some people listen. It doesn't matter how you acquire them. What is important is that you have them to be successful in your expedition. Yes. Yes, brother, I'm sorry. Yes.
So how do you turn your discussion towards God?
Okay, see, this has to do with your personality. Okay? A Muslim, a da'iyah in particular, has to be social and outgoing. You have to be. Because this is what will open the door for you. Okay? Usually. Actually, in cases where you're interacting with human beings. For example, let's just use the airplane example. When you get on an airplane, you don't want to be Mr. Quiet, per se. Or I'm to myself kind of thing. Rather, you want to try to ignite and open as many doors as possible with as many people as possible, in whatever way possible, for you to pave the way for da'wah eventually. Because da'wah may materialize, it may not. But you have to knock. You have to do something. So I'll give you an example of my own personal experience. I don't know if you can agree with it or not, or whether it is effective or not. But if I got on an airplane and I'm sitting next to a non-Muslim, there's no way I'm going to be quiet. No way. Without expressing or showing some act of gentleness or kindness or consideration towards this person. It could be in the simplest thing. It could be, for example, you see him. The most usual one is people sit on their seat belt. They sit on it and then they try to find it. So I say, I'll get it for him. Or if mine, I have mine, I say, you can use mine. I don't like the seatbelt. He will say, no, you have to wear the seatbelt. Huh? Say, oh yeah, thank you for, looking after me. Okay? I was trying to look after you. So anything, little thing like that, khalas, the ice breaks. He's bored to death. Make sure that it's he. Huh? Because some people try to apply this with women and they wind up with a whole other thing. Brother, she needs to become a Muslim because I need to marry her. Say, brother, no, you're on the wrong track already. Because if you married every lady that you gave da'wah to, you will never finish. So, you stick to men. So something very simple like that. Very simple like that. Or, you said, are you vegetarian? Are you vegetarian when the meal comes so I can tell the stewardess or whatever. Anything of this sort. But smile, hey, or hello, as the brother said. How's it going? You can comment on the airlines. Okay, specifically if it's a bad airlines, you can, crack a joke about them. For example, sometimes when we land in Jeddah, we continue to drive in the airplane for like 20 minutes before we actually stop, and then we get onto the shuttle, and then the shuttle will drive you for another 20 minutes until you get to the terminal. So it's like a whole hour from the time you land. So one of the jokes would be, I feel like they're going to drive me back to where we flew from. Okay, how long is this going to take? Whatever. The point being, you just break the ice. Once you break the ice now, how do you turn it into religious? That depends on the person and the situation. Sometimes it's as simple as looking outside the window and say, isn't it amazing, the world? Isn't it amazing how we human beings made this airplane? I mean, think about it. We're flying for like 2 hours, 3 hours. How? It's just a fan going like this. And yet we're flying. There's a pilot. So anything which will kind of bring him towards the idea of creation. Then you say, what is your view on this, by the way? I know some people nowadays, some people believe in God, some people don't believe in God. Where do you stand? If you don't mind me asking. Do you believe in God? He will tell you everything. He will tell you, yes, I believe, and I believe God is Jesus or whatever. Or he'll tell you, I don't believe in God. And you shift it as you like. But the key is them accepting you. Them feeling comfortable enough to have a conversation with you. If you're too much of an introvert, too much to yourself, they're not going to feel comfortable to strike a conversation with you, and the da'wah will fail. So you have to be social, inshallah. Anyways, the time. And I need to renew my wudu before the salah, and we don't want to miss the first row, inshallah. So with this, we conclude the dars. In the next session, bi'idhnillah azza wa jal, we'll be dealing with some of the most critical misconceptions about Islam. Misconceptions about Islam, very difficult one. Jihad, chopping the arm of the thief, stoning the fornicator or the adulteress and lashing the fornicator, things that you don't even want to speak about. But we have to have them ready in case someone presents them, so we can give them the right arguments, inshallah. Jazakumullah khair, wa sallallahu wa sallam ala nabiyyina Muhammad.